Yes, we have already assigned topic. Before going to the topic, I would like to know whether you have any other statements or any other interview reports. Then after that, we are going to go to the particular topic.
Avasarai Bante, we have one report and one email request. With your permission, I'd like to present them.
Yes.
Yeah. Request Bante, it says, Dear Bante, I have a friend of mine, a foreign lady, a Buddhist. Recently, she was diagnosed with cancer and now undertaking name few books of mindfulness, which she can easily understand considering her present situation, background as explained, with Metta Kumara Pereira. That's the end of the request, Bante.
Can you send me the email message? Then I can, easy for me to maintain correspondence. Well, Ari, you may write a letter with particulars, so I will pay attention later with the help of this email.
Yes, Bhante, I will do that. Yeah. Thank you. So I will go to the report. Dear Bhante, I am 17 years old and this is my sitting experience. Sitting meditation. I sat down and closed my eyes. Instantly, my mind was filled with thoughts and I found it difficult to focus on my breath and come to the present. Meditation, I kept thinking about the future, so I focused on that. And at mind would focus on my breath. However, soon the thoughts would rise again and I'll drift my attention to them. This happened throughout the whole meditation process. Not to be short, because I kept getting distracted. Please advise me. Terwan Sarnai, and this is from Onaya. That's the end of the report, Bhante.
Yeah, 17 years old, young girl. So when you are meditating, sometimes your rational mind go to the end. Your language come to the end. So where you get lost like. You can understand me and not me relationship, the boundaries. So therefore, it is no danger because daily you know the path from known to unknown. Bounded situation to the unbounded situation. I would add egotistic trip to the no ego area. So, safe advice is, let it happen again and again. Mind will find the way out. For the moment, mind is amused. Mind is about to go to the unknown area. But as far as you have your faith, you have your history, how it is happening, as far as you are writing, you are in a safety areas. Please let it happen. Then mind will learn how to step into the unknown areas. That is very good for young children. At the old age, your capacity to accommodate that kind of situation is reducing. At the young age, you have this adventurous radical reflection. So your reporting is very good and it is going to the unexplainable part. But it's something reality. It's also part and partial of the reality. The rational world can't understand. Grammatical people can't understand. Rational people can't understand. But the mind is not limited to the rational part, the grammatical part. So therefore, please continue. You may go to that situation less in day-to-day activities and in walking meditation. You may see this kind of situation much in sitting meditation. So therefore, whenever you have unbearable part, just take walking meditation and try to be mindful in the day-to-day activities. So easily you can find a bridge between known to an unknown. This is something like passing the baton in the relay race. Don't drop the baton. Then you are losing the lead. You have to swiftly. You have to change the baton from the one to the other. So there may be some delay, least amount of delay, but the lead can be maintained. So therefore, this is a very good part. You are very good in reporting. Please continue with confidence.
Thank you, Bhante. No more reports. Much appreciated.
Thank you. You have anything, Gina?
Suki Hontu. Sadhu, sadhu anumodami. Anumoditabbang kamami kamitabbang sukhi hotu Sukhiyodhu. So this straight about the Sagataka Vagga, Sanghita Nikaya first book. Yeah. And then and you have to go to the Sagataka Vagga, and there it says parallels in the other verses and books. Yeah. So 1.36. 1.36, then you can, I can find it for you further, and I will let you know later. Yes?
So just before starting off on going back, continuing the Magandhya Sutta, I just wanted to share some things from the Sanskrit version that I quite liked.
What is the sutta name?
It's also Magandhya.
Magandhya Sutta.
But they call it Makandhya.
Magandhya. How do you call it in pronounce in Sanskrit?
Makandhya. Yeah. But some of the things that I liked from the Sanskrit version was that before the Buddha actually said something that was unpleasant to Magandhya's daughter, he actually reflected that if he spoke in a friendly or pleasing way to Magandhya's daughter, she will die sweating with passion. And then that's when he decided to speak with repelling words instead. And also something that's quite nice is that before leading up to all of this, Magandhya kept pointing out to his wife, these are the qualities of the Buddha. And Magandhya's wife is very intelligent and wise, so she actually points out all the things that's quite different about the Buddha compared to regular people. So I'd like to share these facts because I think it's quite nice. So when Magandhya's wife saw the bed, she mentioned that an impassioned person's bed is in disarray or messy. A person that's full of hatred is violently pressed down, and a deluded person's bed is arranged backwards.
A deluded person's bed?
Arranged backwards, yeah.
Arranged back?
Arranged backwards, their bed.
Bed?
Their bed, bed.
Arranged backwards.
No, you are pronouncing bad or bed or
bed, bed,
B-E-D.
Yeah.
Two times mentioned.
Yeah.
The bed is arranged backwards.
Yeah.
After getting up, you prepare the bed. Even Pythagoras is telling like that. Yeah. In the Pythagoras theory, Pythagoras also telling, after getting up, you have to arrange the bed. Yeah. It's the same thing, yes?
And then for the footprints, it says that impassioned person's footprint is effaced. A person full of hatred is deeply imprinted. And a deluded person has a splayed out shape. So it's spread out instead of being straight. Yeah. And then when it comes to the voice, it says that an impassioned person's voice is stammering, hatred person's harsh, deluded person is greatly agitated, and the Buddha's voice is like a Brahmin's kettle drum. And then there's a very nice one that's also mentioned about the eyes as well. So impassioned person's eyes darts back and forth. Hatred stares as if... Someone that's full of hatred, they pretty much stares hard. And then a deluded person as if staring into darkness, whereas a passionless one gazes directly at a yoke's length in front. And that's how monks are also supposed to practice as well, with just gazing at a short distance in front.
So these are very, very well taught and specialized in Burma. When someone come in and pay respect before the teacher, he decide he will be understanding or will be a good disciple or not by your demeanor. So if you come and say, Bhante, I want to practice, you be careful. And Visuddhi Magga says how to reach a teacher. This is the way you must go. So that is just camouflage. This is kind of a show off. So recently, the Richard Davidson asked from the Dalai Lama, learned person can go to the teacher and behave in such a compassionate way, but it's just a show off. Will that indicate his brain setup, or will that teacher understand he is just showing, or is reality? So this is what happened in the sales girls and sales boys. They are very smiling and doing, but that is not their nature. It is by learning. So this is the commercial world. But this talk about the learned mind, learned person, his demeanor, footprint, the bed, the word, the eyes, are reflecting his calm mind. But today, everything is being taught in outsource business. And Sri Lankan airline is very good, learning from the Singapore airline, and they know how to treat the people. But the Arabic people, they don't have that quality. They are arrogant. So therefore, Arabic airline hiring Sri Lankan girls and boys after 2 years of experience. This is not due to give the compassionate treatment to the passenger, to earn money. That's to earn money. Singapore Airline told, don't start in Sri Lanka. You can't have airline. Everything, that is the what now? Richard Davidson is asking from Dalai Lama, is it just a show of compassionate behavior and very accommodating? But this is for the tourism. But the Buddha's appearance in front of Magandhya, the chief, and the wife and the daughter, is no such camouflage, no such makeshift, no such facelifting. So therefore, the Mahayana people, they are writing with what authority? The Burmesiders talk about that with what authority? They are behaving according to the book, but they are not enlightened. Their book says this indicate this and this indicate that. But the Buddha never mentioned these kind of thing in the sutta. So therefore, better to learn Mahayana Sanskrit version, Theravada Pali version. But they are just interpretation. But lucky enough, we have our direct touch. When you are walking, we know the footprint. We are not going to chase behind Magandhya. Or going to take the attention of the Magandhya's daughter. But we can look at the footprint. So you can see after morning, you can see after so much of walking in the walking path, some people like a bulldozer. They have gone and you can see the track. Some people have very messy track behind. And when the dog is moving, different footprint. Different things are there. But if you are going to make a theory out of that, I know it's utterly wrong. Utterly wrong. These theories never lead to Nibbana. They are leading to civilization. They are leading to theories. So we have to learn. That is what I learn, a meaning of a word in Pali, in Sinhala, in Tamil, in Sanskrit, in English. Then only I can understand the nuances of the meaning. Not one thing is better than the other. So Analeo, he did a comparison between the Majjhima Nikaya, Majjhima Agama and the Majjhima Nikaya, and if hardly any difference, only few differences, and now it is happening, Agama research. Bhikkhu Bodhi's place, they are learning the Sanskrit version and the Pali version, and hardly any difference. The Satipatthana Sutta itself also, order is different, content is the same. Good. Okay, now Sudhu Amdru, Mudrakita Amdru.
I would also like to add, this is an extremely early sutta in the whole collection, meaning it's actually coming from the first year of enlightenment of the Buddha, maybe 5 weeks after his enlightenment. So in the very first verse, he refers to the Tumara's three daughters, Tana, Arati, and Raga, Roga. And, so it was like a close reference back to when he kind of had visions of Mara's daughters before he was enlightened and how he had overcome that battle. And we know that this is an early sutta because it's also cross-referenced. It's mentioned again in the Samyutta Nikaya, in the Jataka tales, in the Dhammapada verses. So the sutta is very cross-referenced, and so we can take it that this is a very early phase for the Buddha, you know, in he's still just freshly enlightened. And what's also very interesting about this is because the Buddha uses coarse language in it to kind of shock the daughter out of her vanity and her conceitedness. This also indicates that this isn't written by a committee, Because if this was written by a committee of monks later on, they would have definitely tried to sanitize any bad language out or something like that. And you can see that in the modern times, you know, that people want to make the scriptures sound holy and, very, very nice and neat and stuff like that. And people would say, the Buddha would never say anything rough or coarse like that. But he says it with purpose and meaning to kind of shock the person out of another course of action. And also the other target in this is obviously the parents. And as mentioned by Venerable, the there was a very strong in the description around the sutta. There's a very strong discussion between the mother and father, who were very astute. And this is also mentioned in the commentary to this sutta in the commentary. Bhikkhu Bodhi has a very nice description of the same thing, of this detailed description of the footprints and the bed and all of this. And as we mentioned last week as well, this is something the Burmese have really picked up on in the meditation tradition. So this kind of teaching got really embedded into different cultures, and they pick it up. Like in Burma, this idea about how the Buddha's footprints and all of that have a very strong, important meaning. And these footprints were not were worshipped. Like, this idea of the footprint was worshipped up to the time of the Greeks, when the Greeks invaded Afghanistan with Alexander the Great. That was only the beginning of the introduction of images of the Buddha. Before then, it was the footprint of the Buddha, or the Bodhi tree, or the Bodhi leaf, were the symbols of the Buddha, and not a statue of the Buddha. So this idea of how a footprint is very deep in that time in India, and in that culture in India. And I mean, we still have Buddha footprints. You know, you'll see these kind of moldings of a footprint of the Buddha. They're still considered very important to this modern time. But in the early period of Buddhism, this idea of the footprint was far more important, because we didn't have other symbols of Buddhism. So this indicates a very early phase of Buddhism as well. So that's one of the reasons that I like looking at these Samyutta Nikaya, because you can say that it's very close to the most original teaching of the Buddha.
So still that this is a very early sutta, that's a common notion. And after 5 weeks or so, I don't know what are the clues. How can you say this is just after this thing? And someone should have the chronological pattern to indicate this is in which vasa, that kind of thing. But there is no accepted chronology.
Yeah, no, it's just by location. It's the only time that this location is mentioned in the Pitaka, actually. And we know that this location was related to the
enlightenment. So Bhikkhu Bodhi is in a such a situation, he has studied everything, so he is in a qualified position to say the location and the time. So, but it may or may not be wrong, but we accept the Sutta Nipasa is a very archaic and very early teachings. And the other thing is the footprint. If you go to Sitalapabbata, the Akasa Vihara, that means the highest, most point, there's a Dagaba. No, Sitalapabbata. Nimalava, passing Nimalava. And there are footprints that not indicate the Buddha's footprint, four cardinal directions from being standing on there, you worship the Dagaba. And the other thing is, early most commode made in Sri Lanka, were out of rock. There's a footprint is there. Front area is for the urine. The backside hole is for the matter. So it is being separated. There also footprint is exactly the same. And this is the first time you did it. It is available in Kaludiya Pokuna. The first toilet prepared, so polished. That, as well as the footprints in the Dagaba, in the four cardinal areas, earlier people thought this is something to worship. No, that is the place you stand and worship the Dagaba, indicating four cardinal directions. And these things are mixing up with the Buddha's footprint and some other hinting to the devoted people how to use a toilet and how to stand in the toilet or how to worship the Dagaba in the four cardinal directions. So there are a lot of things. And Sri Lanka, being we have the Adam's Peak, there the only the left footprint is there, not both. All the other places, both the footprints are there. And they think there are four places Buddha put the footprint. And every religion, they say, they are our master's footprint, Adam's Peak. He says, this is Adam's first footprint. Muslims, they say, this is the paradise. And the Buddhists, they say, Buddha's footprint. So it's a very nice place for everyone to go there and worship and come. And for a long time, it is unknown. Recently only came. So therefore, these things are just like astronomy, just like the body interpreting the character by the body interpretation and the movements, hardly leading to Nibbana. They are worldly knowledges. And whenever someone is going to study the Buddha, they get lost. Because Buddha indicating something beyond. Not like Hollywood actors and the actress and how to make the body kind of thing. So therefore it's very critical, Sanskrit version and the Pali version, you can see differences. And Burma, as you mentioned, they are very specialized. They picked up everything. And everything is depicted when you are walking. If you keep the heel first, you are hate character. If you have put all the footprint together, you are deluded character. If you are keeping the pillow, that you are lustful character. So likewise, they have. I mean, that is their interpretation is there. But whether it is proven or not, whether it is going for the beautification or Nibbana, we have to keep it open.
Yeah, there's many other factors such as injuries or state of health or other conditions that will affect how somebody is walking or moving. You know, if you've had a stroke and you have a funny walk, maybe it's because you have a stroke and not because you're a hateful character.
That is why you say the EEG and the heartbeat mess pattern. Then you can say whether you had a heart attack or not. I mean, they are different internal factors, but early people got external factors, the footprint, eyesight, the voice, and the movement of the legs. They indicate. That is why the pulses came in between. People touch it and say what you are, how you are, who you are.
So I'll read back over the start again. So the Buddha says in the first verse, having seen tanha, arati, and roga, I did not have any desire for sensual intercourse. So why should I desire this full of urine and faeces? I would not wish to touch her even with my foot. So again, this is quite a shocking statement to make to a pair of parents who have just offered their daughter to you in hand in marriage. And what's also quite astonishing is in the second verse, then the father replies, if you do not wish a gem such as this, a woman desired by many rulers of men, what kind of view, behavior, observances, lifestyle, existence and rebirth do you assert? So how many parents would take such a refusal, such a coarse refusal by the Buddha, and turn it around with inquiry and ask, you know, what's behind your rather, you know, coarse reply to us, you know? You know, whenever somebody is a bit angry with us or something like that, we immediately superficially react to it and say, well, you know, that person's so-and-so, they were so horrible to me, and I'm sort of horrible back. So, you know, somebody is behaving badly with me, I behave badly back. But this Brahman is Margandeya is actually inquiring what's behind this kind of this rejection of us, our rejection of our.
That is your yardstick.
Yeah, here's our beautiful daughter, and we're offering her to you in marriage, and you call her a bag of excrement.
Fecus.
and this Brahmin then replies, what's behind all of that? You know, what's behind all of that?
I can relate to one part very little aesthetically. Yeah. I don't know whether it's a fabrication. One day Socrates and his the assistant is passing Athens. And Athens people are selling all the kind of goods. And passing the Athens, Socrates says, so what a wonderful thing. They are selling so much of thing to the cheap prices. I am not moved because I need not anything. So therefore, whatever the hahu, what is the shouting, immaterial. I went through the Athens, but I am not moved. Because I need no anything. If I need, I go in search of and search for the good things and the cheaper things. I am engaged. So I have no delay. I can go through it because I have no desire. The same thing, putting it in a decent way, not telling the Athens is a shit or Athens is his fecus or something like that. That is it. Whatever the advertisement happen, if you are not chasing behind, no harm. Advertisements are using naked girls. Advertisements are using these old beautiful pictures. That is for your well-being? No. If you are desire, if you need, you will caught up by the product as well as the advertisement. But if you are right from the beginning, if you have no any need, you can go through Athens, no problem. I can't go through Bunnings. I am always happy with Bunnings.
So this indicates an extremely wise or certainly a person who has a lot of command over themselves, like they have their beautiful daughter rejected, their offer of marriage, or their offer to become a joint family, rejected, and he's asking what's the view, what's the behavior, what observances, lifestyle, existence, and rebirth do you assert? So he cuts down to a very deep sort of inquiry into the nature of life, rather than immediately rejecting the Buddha for being so coarse with him. So then the Buddha replies, having decided among teachings, Margandeya, said the Buddha, it does not occur to one, I assert this about a view, tightly grasped, but seeing interviews, not grasping any of them, investigating, I saw the peace within. So here, in a quite poetic way, the Buddha is saying that, you know, it comes down to this idea of right view, right from the start. So we are full of views, and that the Buddha realized that he had to go beyond views, not grasp any of them. An investigation instead would be his pathway. And that he saw peace within this way of not grasping onto views. And this was the beginning. So the Buddha finds that thread. What kind of view, behavior, observances, lifestyle, existence, and rebirth do you assert? That this thread of thinking that this Brahman has, this Margandeya, is around views, and that indeed that the way out of views, the escape, was to find not grasping onto any views. So his teaching is going to be about dismantling views and observances and lifestyle as a basis for spiritual growth and practice. So having decided amongst teachings, it does not occur to one, I assert this. So this escape from conceitedness, I assert this. You know who I am. One of my teachers, one of the monks I stayed with in Malaysia, his biography was striving to be nobody, because it was the opposite in Chinese. It was like, you know who I am. And you know who I am, or I assert this, like, is a very powerful idea. I assert this, you know, I say this. I assert this. If we look at the media at the moment, it is very poor on facts and information and very, very heavy on opinion, because opinion is cheap. Whereas facts, to have proper reporters on the ground doing detailed investigation, is very, very expensive. So it's very cheap to have a bunch of people in a room just giving their opinion. I assert this. But it's very confusing, and ultimately it's just empty noise. And we have to actually have kind of peace. I was asking a friend of mine, he's very into sport. And I said to him, how do you watch an event, a sporting event? And he says, I turn off the commentary and I just look at the television. You know, I make up my own mind. I look at it myself very carefully, and I make my own mind. I don't need the distraction of the commentary to...
In Sri Lanka, they put on the television as well as the radio. Radio also gives the commentary, television also giving the commentary. He is not enough to look at the screen. Even if they go to the pavilion, they bring the radio. Just seeing is not enough. They want to have this muck, that entertainment. They give all the history and kind of thing, and they are not in the present moment. They are only commentaries. That is called papancha.
Yeah, definitely. That is papancha for sure. And the effect is papancha as well. You can hear that inner commentary in the mind. And what's very interesting in meditation, like, is to make that inquiry or dhamma, that dhamma investigation into the nature of that commentary, and just be an observer in one's own life, and not get entangled in the commentary, but as the Buddha puts it here, I saw the peace within. Investigating, I saw the peace within, not grasping any of them, but seeing interviews. And yeah, so this is becomes very informative then, where the different views and opinions become useful information if you know how to look at them correctly. Meaning you don't follow the opinion, but you understand, oh, this person is anxious, or this voice in my head is anxious. Or worried, or remorseful, or regretful, going into the past, going into the future, escaping from the present moment. And the way for peace is to actually be able to listen to those, investigate those, go into them, but not be caught up in them and not believe them for one moment. So the fourth verse is, indeed, Muni, you speak without grasping those judgments that have been molded. As to that matter called the peace within, how is it proclaimed by the wise? So here the Magandhya has the insight that what the Buddha is saying is true. So he has heard and considered what the Buddha has to say. So even what's very interesting in this is it's a dialogue between the Buddha and Magandhya. So the verses are moving from the Buddha to Magandhya, then back to the Buddha, then now back to Magandhya. So they're both listening to each other very carefully. They're not shouting over each other and coming at each other from set places and set pieces, but are actually opening and inquiring and going into a very deep conversation with each other.
But not speaking people, Magandhya's daughter and the wife may be brooding and may be boiling inside. They are not talking. Talking two people are very consistent, responding, rational, but not speaking people are boiling, 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 boiling. I don't know Magandhya's wife, but Magandhya's daughter, definitely, she, it was a turning point for her, the hate base.
Yeah, and people give a great sort of emphasis that there's a noble silence, but here is the time to talk and to have a dialogue and deep inquiry and use the power of speech to communicate with each other and lead each other forward, to a higher goal. And, so this is quite astonishing. And I get a feeling from this like line, indeed, Muni, you speak without grasping. So when Magandhya could say that to the Buddha, you speak without grasping, like he's saying you don't have an agenda here. You're not being tricky with me or being funny or something like that. You're speaking without grasping. You don't have, like I said, an agenda. And yeah, you're not trying to be smart. And what you have to say is very important, and I'm listening very carefully. As he said, those judgments have been formulated. As to that matter called the peace within, how is it proclaimed by the wise? So here, again, Magandhya is, the Buddha is laying out a trail for him. I saw peace within. And then in this verse, Magandhya, and this is a very important part of skilled dialogue and speech, is that you repeat back what the person has said so that they understand that you've heard them. So the Magandhya is building on that speech by the Buddha, saying, as to that matter called the peace within, how is it proclaimed by the wise? And he's inviting the Buddha to go further into his teaching. And, you know, we understand that this is a very deep dialogue because they're repeating to each other what the other person has said. So I hear what you're saying, and then you answer the question. So this is, again, skill speech from 2,500 years ago.
The confirmation, what the Buddha says, by repeating, he's confirming the same thing. So what the readers like us, we can understand if we lose at the first time. Second time, you can listen from the Magandhya's point of view. So that is the way the confirmation happened of the truth.
So the next verse, the fifth one, is going to be the nutshell of the Buddha's teaching. So this is really quite complicated or difficult. So he says to Magandhya, the Buddha says to Magandhya, not by view, nor by learning, nor by knowledge, nor do I speak of purity through good behavior and observances, but neither without view, without learning, without knowledge, without good behavior, without observances, not in that way, but having relinquished these, not grasping any of them, peaceful, not dependent, one should not hanker for existence.
In Pali, no chekira dittya, na sutya, na jnanene. Silabbate napi visuddhi maha. Aditya, asutya, anyana, asilata, abbata nopi, tene. Manyamahang, momuhameva dhammang. Manyamahang, momuhameva dhammang. Ditya eke, pachanti suddhi. Not by looking, not by hearing, not by brain, and not by the wrong practice. And by looking, by hearing, and the knowledge as well as the not grasping the unwanted rituals, also impossible. Manyamang, momuhameva dhammang. They are methodologies. They are not, may not be reading. Ditya eke pachanti suddhi. Some people, by looking at it, by knowing that, without practice, they become enlightened. Understanding by hearing, seeing, and knowledge is one extreme. Not hearing, not seeing, and not knowledge in one extreme. So they are misleading you. By understanding that, some people develop the correct view, they will be enlightened. Not by practice, not by learning. So therefore you are learning, knowing it is not leading to directly, but some kind of a preparing for yourself. So therefore in Panditarama, one day they asked me to translate the receipt. When someone is giving donation, they are giving the receipt for them, telling that you have contributed to the basic idea of the Panditarama. It is in Burmese, so it happened me to translate into English. First, the Buddha says it's a place for theoretical teaching. It's an academic place. But I went to Panditarama telling it's a practicing place. Buddha says, no, this is an academic place. And with that academic knowledge, we are practicing. Practicing comes second. And they give the theory, first kind of approach. That is the way the bill is telling. So when Jnanarama also says, you must have a fair understanding of the theory. But understanding it is not the end. It's just a mean. So learn it. But by learning, don't get conceited. Don't get proud. See this as a... There may be some other people without any kind of such a teaching, they can understand Dhamma. They may have some shortcuts. So that we have to meet different people from the different viewpoints and share each other. There is no linear system. Linear system may or may not be. You just practice, you just learn, you just by heart it. But meanwhile, you have to practice. So therefore, this one is present is really challenging the Buddhism in Sri Lanka. Because learning. No one is practicing. And they are going and abroad and teaching others. This is Buddhism. But the practicing people will understand, do you sit? Do you practice? No. Then, the sutta that I am handling down there, Buddha says some clouds are there, they are making thundering storms but not raining. Some clouds are there, no thundering but rain happens. Some clouds are there, thundering and rain happens. There are some clouds, no thundering, no rains. So present-day Buddhism means only thundering, no rain. Gajjita, no vasita. It's just the shouting.
So in English, this use of the negative is very not intuitive to us. It's a positive language. So we don't like when we say not by view. So I often like to use the word free from view, free from learning, free from knowledge. So it sounds a little bit strange, but sometimes it's a way of helping me to understand
that is the point
what the Buddha
where
is saying.
I got interested in Buddhism because Venerable Dhammika teach me, no ditti is the ditti. De-learning is the mindfulness. Deconstruction is the meditation, mindfulness, the inside meditation. So whatever you have to learn, you have to the ditti. No ditti is better. This is the correct ditti. So it was a shocking for me because I thought Buddhists are in the correct view. Others are wrong views. Muslims and the Tamils and the Christians, they are wrong viewed. Born with a bloody wrong view. We are born with Dhamma ditti. Well, he says each and every ditti is wrong, Micha ditti. Each and every learning is wrong. But if you know, you can de-learn it, you can deconstruct. Any learning amount is not harmful. So you have to understand it as a tool.
Yeah, so when I say the word free, I don't mean that like the Buddha is earlier talking about grasping, that one is grasping to the views. So when I say free from views, one is not under the influence or the control of the views. One is informed by the views. So, yeah, so when we have thoughts arising in our mind when we're meditating or something like that, we're a slave to them if we are following the thoughts, if we become a puppet of those thoughts. But if we know those thoughts are arising, we can trace back, oh, what's happening? Why is that coming up? Oh, I have an underlying anxiety and fear, so I'm thinking about the future. Or maybe I need to do something else. I need to have some duties that I forgot to do. So free from view. Free from learning. Again, as Mahatero just mentioned, about this burden of learning, that we have to learn and learn and learn. Sometimes we have to do, and we can learn by doing as well. And free from knowledge. Again, people put a lot of emphasis on their credentials, but does that mean they know what they're doing? Free, nor do I speak of purity through good behavior and observances. So again, people can put a lot of emphasis on the shallow exterior of, oh, I behave so well and I do all these observances. That makes me holy or you know, goody-goody. But the Buddha points out that this is not the way to genuine freedom from grasping. But neither without view, without learning, without knowledge, without good behavior, without observances, not in that way. So the Buddha is pointing out this paradox between learning and not learning. So it's a way that's a middle way between learning, like where we learn with meaning and purpose, and we're not tied to those teachings, or we're not enslaved into those teachings and views. As Venerable was saying, I can find it a bit tiresome where, you know, I didn't grow up as a Sri Lankan. I didn't grow up with my birth cert saying certified Buddhist, Sri Lankan Buddhist. You know, so I grew up in a Christian background. And, you know, after all these years of studying Buddhism very diligently as best as I can, yeah, you know, I meet people who try to explain Buddhism to me, you know, because they understand that they're, you know, these born Sri Lankan Buddhists, and they're telling me how it is. And I'm like, what are you talking about? You don't even practice. You don't know what you're saying. And so it's getting this balance right between using knowledge so that it points you in the right direction, but not being enslaved to that knowledge, and using it for freedom, not enslavement. So, but having relinquished those, not grasping any of them, peaceful, not dependent, one should not hanker for existence. So this is the essence of the teaching in the end, that we come to peace with knowledge, with views and other things, with observances. We're not dependent on knowledge. We're not dependent on views. We're not dependent on observances. And we do not hanker for existence. So this existence is this, you know, constantly being reborn. And if we're having a good life, and for a lot of people right now listening to this talk, they're having a good life. If you look at history, you know, history can be very, very pitiful and wretched and terrible. Hunger and deprivation, floods and diseases and invasions and all kinds of things. Corona, yes. Disease, for sure, has been, you know, slaughtering us for so long. So to have an existence where we have an opportunity to hear the Dhamma and to make progress is a wonderful existence. However, it's just a good existence. And if we don't make progress with these teachings, then we've wasted a good opportunity. And we're always very happy to get rid of bad times. You know, we want to get rid of bad times, but we don't want to be rid of good times. You know, and the problem is that the good times will make the bad times even worse. And it's the way out of suffering that's like, we're not aiming for good times and we're not aiming for bad times. We're aiming to get the hell out of existence. And that's what's really important. You know?
In Pali, it says, Dullabha kana sampatti tatta viveko vipatti. The opportunity is very rare. If you are just playful with the opportunity, it's a bad time for you. If you are negligent, if you are not really making use of the opportunity, it's a crime.
Yeah.
It's a curse for you.
So, yes. And, you know, things can turn upside down in no time, as we saw recently with this invasion of Ukraine. You know, even the day before, nobody imagined it's going to happen. And then the day after, the world has completely changed. So, my point is that we have a good opportunity in this very life, and we should make the most of it to try to, as the Buddha says here, one should not hanker for existence.
I would say it is not in we, it is only I. Not in plural sense.
Yeah, I should not hanker
only
for existence.
I.
And that's don't the only person
him,
who can
don't
do.
Ask him, because it is nonsense.
Yeah.
Be mindful and mind your own business.
Okay. I was using the royal we, like the queen. We escape existence, meaning I escape, try to escape existence.
Capital V, W, capital W.
Yeah. Number six is, if indeed it is not by view, by learn. This is Mahagandhiya replying to the Buddha. And again, you see again, skill speech. He listens to what the Buddha says and he's able to repeat back what the Buddha said. And ask this question, if indeed it is not by view, by learning, nor by knowledge, nor by good behavior and observances that one speaks of purity, nor without view, without learning, without knowledge, without good behavior and observances, not in that way. I think this is an utterly confusing teaching. Some fall back on purity by means of view. That's what he says. And I really like this, that Mahagandhya says, I think this is an utterly confusing teaching. And it if you really think about it, maybe you've been listening to Buddhist teachings a lot and maybe it sounds okay. But if you imagine Mahagandhya is the first time he's hearing this teaching of a Buddha, it's really crazy stuff. Like, and when he knows he's confused, somebody was asking me, what did I think about the Ukraine? And I said, well, I know I'm confused. I'm really confused about that thing. I have no idea.
That is exactly the quantum theory.
You know,
anyone knows quantum theory means he's mad.
If you know what's going on in the Ukraine, then you're either crazy or a genius. Whereas I just know I'm confused about it. You know,
exactly. The Mahagandhya, the daughter, she also confused.
There's different kinds of confusion. There's a confusion because of wrong views and ideas and stupidness. But then there's a person who knows that they're confused because this is a completely radical idea. And is fresh and new, and he's never met this before.
The daughter is with conceit.
Yeah.
The Buddha is telling it's a shit. It's a shit. And she was utterly lost. And when the father comes, he says, you are in ditthi. It's wrong view. And that is also very difficult to grasp. But we are not with Mahagandhya's daughter, we are not with Mahagandhya. So we can learn how the conceit and the ditthi can completely camouflage you, completely give a wrong sunglasses.
So this is very appropriate for Mahagandhya to tell the Buddha, like, you know, I hear what you've said, but I'm confused. So it's opening up the Buddha to go further and explain. But also very present. He's very mindful that this is all radical stuff, and I've never heard this kind of teaching before.
So in Satipatthana, it is happening often. When we are teaching young children, the kids, now I am very confused. But I really understand what you are telling, but I am leaving it parents and everything. They are completely misleading us. What you are telling is correct, but I am confused. Their confusion is enlightening.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, it's not wrong to be confused with confusing matters. When I've met people who are tricky, in my mind, I'm like, I'm very confused about what this person is saying. You know, maybe I have to keep in mind that it's not true, or that it is confusing. Or you meet somebody who is like medically confused, you know, they're dizzy or they're not speaking correctly. And you go, you understand that they're confused. And it's a very painful thing to be confused.
Understand the confusion. That is the most painful. You just say, I am not confused. Yeah. I know very well, like that is utterly confused. He do not know. But if you can tell the Buddha, I can tell I am confused, but still I am with you.
Yeah,
that is very communication, right? The sharpest communication.
Yeah, yeah. So again, I've met it with demented people, like where they get very confused. They don't know where they are. Or if you've traveled a lot and you wake up in a hotel or somewhere like that and you have no idea where you are, you can spend like 10 minutes in the morning and you just don't know where you are. You're lost. You don't know what country you are in, what time zone it is. Are you in the day? Are you in the night? And it's very confusing, and it can be very mindful to just say to myself, I'm confused right now. It's okay, slow down, take it easy. You know, let the information slowly come into me, and or maybe I need to take care of myself. Maybe I need a glass of water. Maybe I need some sugar. Yeah, you know, we get like low in sugar sometimes, and it's natural to be confused. So there's all kinds of reasons we would be confused. And so, I really like this here, that Mahagandhya says, I am confused. And, like, that's so fresh. You know, he's so fresh. He's so present to his condition. So then, the Buddha says, asking repeatedly while dependent on a view, you have become baffled over things tightly grasped. But from this, you have not gained even an inkling, hence you consider it utterly confused.
So this is, I think, the weakness in the linear education and the
comprehensive education is completely lost because they told that linear gradual development, but the Buddha says quick enlightenment. So then Maganji says, I am confused. The Buddha says, good, you have not got even a clue of what I am telling because a thing can happen. Even without learning, enlightenment can happen. But the Maganja says, no, no, it can happen once you completed the course and finished the theory after practicing. Buddha says that is also possible. But there are some other methods. And that is a kind of a threat to this linear education.
So the, as I mentioned earlier, there's many reasons why we can become confused. But here the Buddha diagnoses, in this case with Magandhya, the nature of his confusion, which is that he has a view and therefore he's confused when he meets, the Buddha with the Buddhist point of view. Like, for instance, when I meet people and they're asking me questions, like it's very easy to ask a very simple but very difficult question, such as, can you as a Buddhist monk explain to me about rebirth? And I'm like looking at the other person, like this happened recently when I was in Ireland. And I know they haven't got the first idea. They haven't thought about this. They haven't read philosophy or, but they have a view that because it's a Christian culture that, well, maybe there's a heaven. You die and you're reborn into a heaven. Or maybe there is no heaven. They're a nihilist. I don't know what. But so if I say to them, well, look, it's difficult to explain about this. It's easy to ask the question because they're just going to be totally baffled and totally confused if I try to explain how rebirth happens, that there are future lives, there have been past lives. And they say to me, well, that's just your opinion. And they're completely baffled. And I say, well, okay, you can do this kind of concentration meditation and go back into your past lives and know for yourself who you were, what was your name, what was your clan. This is how you can do it. You can know for yourself. And they're like even more confused, that this is really hocus pocus. And they end up just digging deeper and deeper and deeper into their existing view. And they don't know it's a view that's driving their bafflement. And you can't talk to them, you can't teach them, and it's just like stuck in the mud. It's quicksand. And these discussions will just go off the rails and you can never, get any satisfaction in them. They'll ask you, is the Buddha a god or not a god? What is enlightenment? And so on and so on. And it's just impossible. So they're coming from views and they don't know that they have views and they think that they're free of views because I'm an educated person and I'm asking the question and they don't realize that they're completely stuck and it's really difficult. So one who thinks himself equal, superior or inferior might engage in disputes because of this, not shaking amongst these three discriminations. He does not think equal, superior. So here, again, we come back to this core on which all views are built, which is around conceitedness. And it's very, very interesting to watch conceitedness instantaneously arise in every interaction that we have between ourselves and another person, where we're always gauging, am I equal, superior or inferior to this other person? And it's instantaneous and it's constantly updating. If I meet a junior monk, I know they're a junior monk. If I meet a senior monk, I know they're, it's in my mind. I've met them before. I know what my status is. And in some ways, this discrimination is very useful. And this power of discrimination is very necessary in wisdom. But this addition of conceit, of value, of judgment becomes very dangerous. And so to be free of this measuring of other people, free meaning you know that you're with a superior or an inferior, but I don't feel inferior or superior. And as I mentioned, probably mentioned many times, whenever people would become enlightened, they would say to the Buddha, this is individual. meaning they were not inferior or superior, or they were not an I. This is individual. So this is a profound, again, teaching here by the Buddha to Mahagandhya.
Okay, now we are going to stop it. Now the idea is changing from the view to conceit.
Yeah.
The two characters, Mahagandhya's father is, Buddha's dialogue is with view, and the Mahagandhya, the daughter, is with the conceit. She is very proud and telling that I'm very beautiful and my parents are putting me into a Buddha, and Buddha is telling me I am like the pot of shit. So now the changing is from the comparison, conceit. And once conceited, ditthi and mana, ditthi and tanna can make you sick. So, but quickly, for 845 to 46, changing the topic from the ditthi to mana. They are very big philosophical foundation changing. So, still Buddha is continuing. Therefore, these suttas are considered very comprehensive, considering all the aspects. So, one gatha, one stands out of the other, huge change from the foundation-wise. So in time to come, more Buddha is going to take into the other, the foundation of ignorance, tanha mana ditthi, the view and the conceit and the desire. So therefore this sutta is often referred because it's tackling all the roots. So therefore I would like to save the sutta for the next day. Thank you very much for the participation and from their interpretation and views. Kamami kamitabham. Sukhi hotu. Sukhi hotu.